Blog Talk Radio.
Gonna tell you a little bedtime tale, legend it will become. Burgers flying out the door, sail on. 2-for-1, no concern for the future, living for today. Fast food bite on your way, lay it all to waste. The masses are afflicted now. Moo, mad cow, mad cow. Mad cow line dance song.
Hey, Shanghai Nation, welcome to the show here on a Friday afternoon. QT and Shanghai with you like normal. Really fast before we jump into things with our guests. If you're looking for some wrestling in the next couple days, tonight, WCWO in Indianapolis like usual. All-Star Wrestling in Squamish, B.C., APW in Royston, Georgia, BCW in Spring Place, Georgia, NSCW in Franklin, Kentucky, SCW in St. Paul, Minnesota, UCW in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and APW in Chester, South Carolina. Tomorrow night, WUW at La Papelonitas in Bremerton, Washington, featuring not only myself, but the return of Kevin Sullivan. All-Star Wrestling back tomorrow in Surrey, B.C., ACPW in Newcastle, Delaware, PWCS in Alton, Illinois, EWE in Jeffersonville, Indiana. Warriors for Wrestling in conjunction with House of Hardcore in Fort Wayne, Indiana tomorrow, SCW in Davenport, Iowa, ESW in Albion, New York, GSW in Harrogate, Tennessee, ATCW in Martinsburg, West Virginia, and IWR in Paris, Texas tomorrow. Without further ado, I would like to welcome our guest to the show today. It is his first time with us, Levi Blue. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, since it is your first time with us, we'll give you our first-timer's question to start things off. What got you into the business of professional wrestling?
Well, I guess I'm going to show my age. It was right around 84 when we first got cable into the house. And my dad, he introduced me to professional wrestling, which, of course, back then was the WWF. And as cliche as it sounds, but it's 100% true, the first match I saw was Hogan versus the Iron Sheik, where Hogan went over for the heavyweight title. And from that point on, man, it was nothing but wrestling for me. While most kids were having their face in their school books and whatnot, I had a copy of Pro Wrestling Illustrated tucked between the pages, you know, reading up on, guys that I didn't see on TV. And it just kind of steamrolled from there.
Well, you actually took an extended period of time off from wrestling, and you recently came back to the sport. Can you tell us what the thought process was for you to leave when you did, and what the thought process was when you decided it was time to return?
Well, it's selfish reasons. 2012 is when I made my retirement official. There was a couple times where I had left the ring previous to that, and a lot of guys in Michigan gave me a hard time for it. But 2012-ish, I found out that I have diverticulitis and Crohn's disease. And so my intestines were essentially getting eaten, both from the outside and the inside. And it was at that point in time I knew I had to give it up, and I took a body slam one time, and I was urinating blood. Went to the hospital, and they found out that I actually had a rupture, and that it could have caused sepsis, and I could have ultimately passed away. Fast forward here to a couple months ago, they had a wrestling show, Pure Pro Wrestling, in conjunction with our Veterans Association here in Holly, Michigan. And I've been trying to put my nose into political office here in my little town, getting ready to run for village council and whatnot. And I was asked by the president of the Veterans Association and the president of our local DDA, hey, we're raising money for the veterans. Would you mind give us a hand? Well, various promoters around the state of Michigan have been driving me nuts about getting back into the ring, and since this was a, you know, what I felt was a worthwhile cause, I agreed to do it. And then, you know, that was probably my mistake, because as soon as a couple of different promoters saw me in the ring, the phone calls started coming, and yeah, that's what brought me back into the sport.
Obviously, from 2012 to 2018, wrestling has changed a bit, especially on the independent circuit. Since you've been gone, what would you say are some of the changes that you've noticed since you've been back in the ring?
You know, obviously, the wrestlers. You know, going into different locker rooms, I have no idea who a lot of these people are anymore. But they know me, which is kind of weird. that's one of the major things is I don't know the people who I used to know. You know, a lot of guys I used to work with are gone. There seems in Michigan especially a lot of promotions have popped up. I haven't since I come back. I haven't really traveled out of state, but I'm noticing a lot of the boys now are doing a lot more traveling from Michigan. You know, I think Michigan's finally being looked at as a legit hotbed for independent wrestlers now, and you know, you got guys like Lotus. You know, Juntai and Gavin Quinn. You got the Death Threat Army, Aaron O'Ryan and Jack Price. You know, a lot of these guys are going out there making big names for themselves. And, you know, I'm really enjoying watching that. Wrestling crowds are definitely getting bigger. You know, when I was going hot and heavy in the 90s there, you know, we were lucky, it seemed like, to wrestle in front of crowds of anywhere from between, you know, 300 and 500 people. And now I'm seeing independent shows. It seems like there's a wrestling revolution going on again. And the crowds are just getting bigger and bigger. And the fans are just a little more frenzied now. I mean, I wrestled on three different shows there back in March. And I only bought 50 T-shirts, and it was crazy. I sold out of gimmicks. You know, 5-10 years ago, I had 50 T-shirts. I'd be sitting on them for 6 months. And so I think wrestling is really making a comeback now. It's good to see.
Obviously, you had a good run before 2012 when you decided to step away. When you look back at your career as a whole, going back then and in the matches you've had since the return, in your opinion, what would you say has been your best match to date?
Oh, well, that's hard for me to say because a lot of the 90s to, you know, early 2000 is a blur. A lot of people don't know this, but I was drinking pretty heavy. I'm not real proud of that. Guys will tell me, hey, Levi, you know, I had a match with you back so-and-so. It was a great match. And I gotta look at them and I got to be like, I'm sorry, who are you? You know, when did we do this? There's this guy out here. Well, now he's in Florida by the name of Q-Ball. He digs up matches from time to time, and I have no idea that I was even on those shows. You know, I would work, you know, 50 hours a week at my shoe job, and then I'd be, you know, on the road, you know, 48, 56 hours on the weekends traveling. It was a rough road. I really enjoyed the matches I had with, when I was really doing the hardcore thing. I really enjoyed my matches with Ian Rotten, Brain Damage, Mr. Insanity. You know, those were always a good time. I mean, I don't like really, name dropping when I wrestled names, but and even at that, I don't consider those my best matches. My best matches are when I've been in the ring with guys and, you know, we really get the fans to pop and, with our work in the ring. And I'd have to say my best. Well, let's be honest, man. Back in the day, Ian Rotten was a hero of mine. When I was a kid watching wrestling, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, and I would watch Ian and Axel at the Texas Sportatorium when they were the Bad Breed wrestling for Global. When I got to step in the ring with Ian, it was like a huge mark moment for me. And it was pretty wild, man, because we get out there and he was talking the match out with me. He's like, hey, kid, you know, I'm going to give you these couple headbutts. The first couple are going to be stiff, then I'm going to lighten up on you. I'm like, all right, that's cool. And then he's like, then I'm going to give you some forearms, and they're going to be stiff, but I'll lighten up on you. I said, all right. Well, next thing I know, we have the match, and he hits me with, like, five of the stiffest headbutts I've ever been hit with. So I grabbed him right by the back of his head and started laying right back into him. Next came the forearms. He jacked my jaw 2-3 different times. Like, son of a bitch, I grabbed him by the head, and I started laying into him. At the end of the match, he comes up to me. He's like, hey, kid, you know, where have you been? And I said, well, sir, whenever you're on a show, I'm not allowed to do hardcore. I wrestle. And he invited me to say the King of the Death matches, and I ultimately wound up turning it down. I'd say that match with Ian Rotten was one of my favorites.
Now, you mentioned the hardcore, and obviously, just about every time Ian Rotten gets in there, it's going to be hardcore. And you had a lot of hardcore matches in your career. Here in 2018, hardcore wrestling not as big as the thing as it has been in years past. And in its place, we see a lot more comedy-based promotions like Chikara and Hood Slam and 3-2-1 Battle here in our neck of the woods in Seattle. Do you think that comedy wrestling can draw as much as a crowd and make as much money as hardcore wrestling did, say, 10 to 15 years ago?
Man, I absolutely love this question. And the reason is this. I've had students before, and one of the things I tell them, it doesn't matter how many high spots you can do. It doesn't matter how many flips you can pull off. If you can make a person laugh, they're going to remember you forever. Now, I don't know how far back you've delved into my history, but, you know, I've always been Levi Blue, but I've also done multiple gimmicks. Like, I was the Boogeyman Ooga Booga, who was a homicidal, sexually repressed clown. I was Cousin Skeeter. I did multiple comedy gimmicks. As Levi Blue, I did a homosexual gimmick where me and Mojo, rest in peace, Mojo, we were the frat. We were the Fraternal Association of Grappling Superstars, or FAGS, if you will. It was myself, Mojo, and Jimmy Jacobs. And we did this three-man homosexual group, and these people absolutely loved us. Now, back in the 90s, you know, homosexuality was a bit taboo, especially when it came to pro wrestling. I mean, you can go back in history as far as Gorgeous George to see that. You know, it wasn't widely accepted as it is now. Promoters were booking us left and right just because of the whole comedy aspect of it. And I watch Chikara now, and I watch Hood Slam, and I watch these promotions, and I absolutely 110% believe the reason why wrestling shows are drawing the way they are. You got guys like, you know, the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega out there, and they are funny as hell at what they do. And I thoroughly believe that when we use the term sports entertainment, that's why people are being drawn to it, because it is entertaining.
Now, you mentioned the other gimmicks that you have done. When you were doing your first big run in wrestling, did you find yourself getting booked as one gimmick or the other, or did promoters often want you to use multiple gimmicks per show, knowing that you did all of them?
Well, when I first started, I was straight the Rebel Levi Blue. Eventually, I got moved into a tag team with a guy by the name of Big Zed McIntyre, and that's where I got my first big run in a tag team called Dirty White Trash. During that time, he had a student by the name of Tommy Thorne, who he trained in Ohio with Gravedigger Jimmy Lee. Tommy Thorne ultimately moved up here, and Zed was getting him booked on shows with us, and I could see the writing on the wall. And so what I wound up doing is I created this character by the name of the Booga Man, Ooga Booga. Now, at that time, I didn't have tattoos or anything like that. So putting me underneath a mask and, you know, working, you know, a couple different matches, it was no problem because I would actually change the style the way I was wrestling versus when I was wrestling with Zed. So you're right. Promoters, actually, they took advantage of that. I would work, you know, two or three different matches, sometimes in a battle royal, another time in singles as Ooga Booga, and then also in my tag persona with Big Zed. I saw the writing on the wall with Zed, and the tag team broke up. What I hated at that point is promoters were starting to want to book Ooga Booga, which I absolutely hated doing because I don't like wrestling under a mask, instead of Levi Blue. So it was a struggle, but eventually I had to phase Ooga Booga out to some promotions in order to get my name as Levi Blue back out there.
Now, in wrestling on the independent circuit, there's a lot of differences as far as size of wrestlers. On the independent circuit, you might have guys that are, you know, very small cruiserweights that go 140 to 160 pounds. You have giant guys that are well over 400 pounds in there. I'm sure you've been in there with both ends of the spectrum at one time or another. What's some of the biggest size differences you've had for matches?
Well, generally when it came to wrestling, I was one of the smallest guys in the ring. I was only, at the time when I was in shape, I was 5'7", and I was around 195 to 200 pounds. It varied. And they would put me in the rings with guys, you know, I don't know if you guys would know these names or not, but with like Big Jason Fuller, he was almost 7 foot tall. He was over 300 pounds. Kurt Chaos, who went almost 400 pounds. Big Chuck Wagon, who at the time was 300 pounds plus. And my promoter at the time, and I was very loyal back when I first got trained, my promoter slash trainer was the Sweet Daddy Malcolm Monroe, who ran Insane Championship Wrestling and Midwest Championship Wrestling here in Detroit. Well, I don't know why. maybe it was a way to try to test me to see how long I wanted to be in the business. But every time I turned around, man, I was in the ring with some monster. You know, I think it was right around my sixth or seventh match, he put me in the ring with the team of Widowmaker and Brain Damage. Brain Damage within the first 2 minutes of the match broke my collarbone. And we wound up going probably 20 minutes. Hell, my very first match, he put me in the ring with Joey Legend. Joe wanted a guy who he could just eat up. Well, I made the mistake. I put my face down in a side headlock. He gave me a pop right on the bridge of the nose, broke my nose, and was like, "Welcome to the business, kid." You know, so it's stuff like that that actually I think made me a better worker, was getting in the ring with guys who were on a larger scale than me. It taught me, you know, how to tell a good story it taught me psychology, and it also taught me how to take an ass beating.
Now, when you get in there with different guys, obviously, especially more so here in 2018 than I would say any time in history, there are different styles of wrestling. You have the Lucha Libre style, which is gaining a lot of popularity in the United States. You have the Japanese strong style, which is also gaining a lot of popularity. You have the high-flying matches. You have the ground-based European style. There's so many different styles at work right now. Do you have a favorite particular style of opponent that you wrestle?
My favorite is, like, I like going Memphis. I like going old school. I like really working the crowd. I like working different types of crowds. You know, I like to gauge my work on what type of crowd I'm working in front of. You know, if I can go Memphis, man, I have just an absolute ball. Fact of the matter is, I'm no luchador. I'm you know, Japanese strong style. You know, I don't quite get that versus hardcore yet. I don't know if it's because I've been gone for so long. You know, because I watch guys, and you know, not to name drop, I watch guys like Shinsuke Nakamura, and I'm like, what the hell is the appeal in this guy? You know, I can watch a match with you know, the Hooligans, and they're laying guys out. You know, is that considered Japanese strong style? I don't know. I like a guy who is there to entertain, and that's what I like to do. So,
most wrestlers, in my estimation, would have in their mind a favorite set of gear that they've had in their career. A lot of wrestlers are extremely proud of the wrestling gear that they have. Some guys make their own. Some people have it custom made for them. Some people are very, very particular about the gear they wear. In your career, have you had a favorite set of gear that you've had for your career?
Yeah, absolutely. I used to do a cowboy gimmick, you know, again, the Pretty Boy Redneck Levi Blue. The boots I had were actually made by K&H. They were actually handed down to me by my ex-tag team partner, Mojo, before he passed away. He had a heart or he had some heart complications, and he asked me to wear his boots. And so I still wrestle in those boots to this day. I've had those boots for 20 years. They fall apart. I get them put back together. When I was doing the cowboy gimmick, when I was in shape, I used to just like to wear my black trunks. You know, I had the LB on the front. And I'm having a hard time remembering who made the trunks for me. But, of course, I did the full-on thing, cowboy hat, full duster, flaming branding iron that Bob Breckenridge custom-made for me. And I did the old Stan Hansen deal where I had the chaw dripping down my chest. That was probably the favorite gear I had.
Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT Vokes is standing by. I know that he has questions to ask as well, so I'm going to pass things along to him for a bit.
All right.
Well, thank you, Sign Guy. Hello, Levi.
How you doing?
Oh, not too bad. Levi, I saw your YouTube video entitled Levi Blue Retirement Speech, Battle Alley Brawl Tag Team Title Match. At the 98-second mark, you said that you had graduated in 1993 in that gymnasium. Can you tell us what high school you graduated from, the one with a nice wooden roof?
Actually, that's Holly High School.
Oh, Tommy High School?
No, Holly. Like Christmas Holly.
Holly. Okay.
Holly.
Okay. Oh, all right. Well, Levi, in what is now a very common question on our Turnbuckle Turmoil show, can you tell us what your school mascot is and what colors he or she sprouts or did sprout?
Well, Our mascot is the Holly Bronco, and that's spelled with an H. And colors are red and white.
Oh, red and white. Okay, that's kind of uncommon. Yes. That's kind of like the color of a candy cane.
Yeah, yep.
Okay, all right. All right. Well, I noticed that you wore a stylish black cowboy hat to the ring, and the loser that interpreted you at the 2 minute and 12 second mark of the video also had a black cowboy hat on. This was a skinny guy that was carrying a bull rope. Can you tell us the name of this black hat cowboy rope person that bore a resemblance to Kid Rock?
That was actually a kid by the name of Billy Ray Daniels.
Oh, Billy Ray Daniels. Okay. Okay. Well, Levi, this may be the only video in all my years of Turnbuckle Turmoil research that two men were in the ring at the same time that possessed black cowboy hats. Can you tell us how much yours cost?
My cowboy hat? Probably right around $100.
Ooh,
I've had
wow,
it for years, so I'm not real sure.
Oh, okay. Yes, I say that it's pretty rare when you see two wrestlers wearing two cowboy hats to the same match. Have you yourself come across video analysis since this match where you have worn your black cowboy hat and the other wrestler has done so, but he was another different wrestler that you faced?
Yeah, I for Universal Wrestling Enterprises up in, oh, where was that, Cadillac, I wrestled another cowboy by the name of Rough Crossing.
Oh, Rough Crossing. Wow, okay. Now, wouldn't it be ironic if there was a match between a wrestler named Rough Crossing and one named Smooth Sailing? That would be very ironic.
That'd be a bit different, yes.
Yes. Okay. Well, Levi, we have a wrestler out here in the Northwest named Lone Star who also has a cowboy hat. He warned me one day that it was unwise to ever touch another man's hat. Have you ever heard of or watched a YouTube video of Northwest wrestler Lone Star, who has been on our show before? Lone Star.
No, I haven't seen a video of Lone Star.
Oh, okay. Well, I think Sign Guy might be able to pass on some videos of Lone Star to you. And we assign a weekly homework assignment, a weekly Turnbuckle Turmoil homework assignment. Would you be willing to do this homework assignment of looking up some Lone Star videos who is currently wrestling at Blue Collar Wrestling in Portland, Oregon? Would you be able to do that?
Sure, I'd check it out.
And could you pass on your comments to Sign Guy about his stylish cowboy hat that I had been warned not to touch?
Sure, I can do that for you.
Oh, this is very good. Okay, I'm going to mark this down in our Turnbuckle Turmoil homework book. This is very good. Okay, all right. Well, Levi, my wrestling sources in Shelton, Washington, tell me that you are booked at a wrestling event on June 2nd in a town I'm probably mispronouncing, Wyandotte, Michigan, at the Brass Monkey Banquet Hall. Is this right?
That is true, yes.
Oh, okay. Can you tell us who you might be facing, bearing in mind one of the top five laws of nature in wrestling, that the card is subject to change?
True. Honestly, I thought I was a surprise. I guess that's out of the bag. I don't know yet. I know I'm supposed to be with it's going to be a Brew Crew reunion with my brothers Roughhouse Rob and Kamikaze Keith Calhoun. We haven't been together in a ring since my retirement years ago. And I don't know who we're set to face yet.
Oh, wow. Okay. Now, when you say your brother Roughhouse Rob, he isn't exactly your biological brother, is he? Or do you have some biological brothers?
No. Rob and I, we were married for, you know, the wrestling term married, for years. You know, we were in the ring, many, many, many wars against each other and with, you know, tagging up with one another. So my biological brother, no. But then again, you know, I have family that isn't blood and I have blood that isn't family. So.
Oh, okay. Can you tell us if you have a real brother in real life?
I do. I haven't seen him. I've seen him once in probably, well, no, I take that back. I'd be lying. I've seen him twice in about 30 years.
Oh, okay. All right. Then I will probably, I was going to ask if you had any backyard wrestling matches when you were young, back in the 90s.
No, and that surprises a lot of people because I went straight from high school. I was a very conscientious student. I didn't play a ton of sports. I was involved in a lot of academic competitions. And as odd as this is going to sound, when I was out of school, I come right home, 4 o'clock, Global Wrestling was on. And after Global Wrestling, my face was stuck in my Nintendo. And if it wasn't stuck in my Nintendo, I was studying because I was like in DECA, Odyssey of the Mind. I was on our Quiz Bowl team, you know, of various academic competitions. So, no, I never did the backyard wrestling.
Oh, okay. Did your Quiz Bowl team ever go to state? And were they involved in state competitions?
When I was on, no, we didn't go to state. I guess I wasn't that great a student. But we did appear on, you know, the local television Quiz Bowl Challenge, it was called. So that was quite an experience. That was actually my first experience when it came to being on TV.
Would it be safe to say that in high school you were the rougher version of Dr. Sheldon Cooper?
Yeah, you could say that. I mean, I had my fair share of fights in school, but yet I was also like the I guess you could say the teacher's pet. Matter of fact, if you watch some of the videos, one of my old teachers, he comes to a lot of my shows, Mr. Church. As I was talking with your co-host there, president of our veterans office is actually my old drama teacher, Mr. Mishler, who also came to that wrestling show. So I'm still tight with my teachers after, you know, being out of school for 25 years.
Oh, okay. Now, am I correct in hearing, did I hear right that Mr. Church was your drama teacher?
No, that would be Mr. Mishler.
Oh, okay.
No, Mr. Church was actually my first aid teacher.
Oh, first aid teacher. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Kind of went hand in hand with the wrestling, I guess.
Yeah, okay. All right. Have you ever had to use his services when he came to one of your matches?
Not when he was at one of my matches, but when he actually, one of our assignments for the semester was we had to come up with our own safety kit. And that safety kit went on the road with me for about the first 10 years of my wrestling career.
Wow. Now, it did not contain morphine, did it?
No. No comment.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right. Now, when you were doing the drama class at your high school, would one of the plays that you put on or were in, would it have been Midsummer's Night Dream?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I was in, I was in Caesar. I was in Les Miserables. I was in Grease. and that was it.
Oh, well, Greece. Okay. All right. Well, Levi, getting back to the Brass Monkey Banquet Hall, have you wrestled at the Brass Monkey Banquet Hall before?
Yeah, it actually used to be called a place called Dom Polsky's at one time, I believe, in Wyandotte. And I was there for quite a few shows with, I believe it was called Michigan Championship Wrestling. And they've since changed their name to DSW, Detroit Style Wrestling, it's called.
Oh, okay, Detroit Style Wrestling. Okay, okay.
Yeah, I don't know what Detroit Style is unless it's, you know, you're holding people up before you get to the ring and robbing them. I'm not for sure, but I'll figure it out when I get there. So.
Oh, well, I thought a segment or a part of Detroit Wrestling was taking a Michelin tire and putting it over the person and making his arms immobile. A tire.
That might work. If we can drop him off on the corner of Martin Luther King out there in front of the Joe, we might have a win in my favor. Who knows?
Yes. Yes. Okay, well, Levi, are you familiar with the song Brass Monkey by the Beastie Boys?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. Is that one of your favorite Beastie Boys song?
Oh, I have many favorite Beastie Boys songs. But yeah, I guess that would be included in that.
Have you ever considered using Brass Monkey for a couple times for your entrance music and seeing how it goes over with the crowd?
No, absolutely not, man. I don't. What do I use now? I don't even know what the heck I use now, honestly. So, Fight by Dope, I think it's called. So.
Wow, okay. All right. Well, Levi, I also saw your YouTube video of your match with Ian Rotten. Now, I'm sure you've had many of them. It was the one that was passed on to me by Sign Guy. But you came out with a Pabst Blue Ribbon Beer T-shirt on. Would you say that Pabst Blue Ribbon is one of your top three beers that you consume?
Well, my number one's Budweiser. My number two, Budweiser. No, number three, Budweiser. It's not going to make my top three. Maybe my top five. If it's the only thing in my refrigerator, then it becomes my number one.
Oh, okay. Is there any chance that Coors Light is one of your top six? Coors Light.
No, sir. I said I like beer, not water. So.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right. Well, Ian, in that match, or at least the one that I saw on YouTube, Rodden was full of piss and vinegar before the match, and he said he didn't know you, but he called himself the King of Hardcore, and he requested that the match not be started in the ring, but among the people that paid. My question is, have you ever wrestled in a bowling alley among people? A bowling alley?
No, but I have wrestled in a gas station.
Ooh, gas station. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, there's a potential of my earlier comment where you could use a Michelin tire to immobilize your opponent's arms. That would have been good. All right. Well, in that match with Ian Rotten, were you surprised at the very seldom seen 10 headbutts in a row that he gave you at the 5 minute and 30 second mark? 10 headbutts.
Yeah, I think that's when I started firing back on him pretty hard. Because that wasn't supposed to be the way it was. And I think he may have been even more surprised that I got up from that. So.
Yes. Now, headbutt against head is cranium against cranium. I was going to ask how it felt to survive those 10 headbutts, only to be followed by a fluorescent light tube.
Yeah, but he got those fluorescent light tubes right back. And I was pissed off, honestly. You know, here this guy is, I showed him all the respect in the world, and at that point in time, he wasn't showing me none. And
He seemed to be a little stiff.
Yeah, well, I mean, at one point in that match, you probably seen it, he hit me with a forearm right across the bridge of my nose. And,
yeah.
I wound up, you could see where I was firing right back with the forearms. It was a brutal match, but, you know, like I said, at the end of the match, you know, it seemed like I earned the respect of one of my heroes. You know, when the crowd was chanting at the end of that match, and Ian was coming back to the ring, I thought for sure he was coming back in there to, you know, kick my ass. And as it turned out, he shook my hand. And for me, personally, at that moment in time, that was absolutely, I was awestruck. You know, here it is, one of my heroes is, you know, showing me respect. Until I got to the back and he said, "Hey, kid," and I'm probably as old as him.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Now, where does Ian Rotten hail from? Is he also a native Michiganer?
No, he is actually, where is he from? I'm not for sure. You know, like I said, I used to watch him on the TV when he was down at the Dallas Sportatorium. When I first started coming to ICW wrestling back in the early 90s or mid-90s, Malcolm Sr. Would bring him in, and I would watch him in matches with guys like Dirty TX and Psycho Rick Matrix. And, you know, for me, seeing Ian live as a kid was, you know, absolutely huge. So.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Levi, you told Sign Guy that your dad got cable at the age of 4. I once went steady with a girl back in 1985 just because she had cable. Was I morally wrong?
Absolutely not. If she had beer in the refrigerator, man, you should have engaged that girl. So.
Oh, okay. Yes, cable was pretty new back then, you know. And okay, yes.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. MTV used to actually play music instead of whiny women complaining about boy problems. So.
Oh yeah, are the lack of marriage partners out there?
Right. My daughter's on this kick now where she's watching these people. They don't even know each other. They're getting married within 24 hours. I'm thinking to myself, I've been married for 22 years, stupid. What are you thinking? So.
Oh, okay. Wow. All right. Well, Levi, you said when you went to school, you were studying Pro Wrestling Illustrated when the other kids had their nose in the school books. My question is, were you ever ranked number 500 in Pro Wrestling Illustrated?
No, Levi was always 501. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, that's the gimmick I always use, you know, Levi 501. So what the hell? I thought it was funny. So.
Well, Levi, you talked about your three-man, well, I kind of hate to use the word, homosexual entertainment slant. Were you a big fan of WWE's Billy and Chuck?
No, honestly, I mean, you want to talk attitude era. I mean, back then I was a huge Stone Cold fan. I could really care less about the whole Billy and Chuck angle back then.
Oh, okay. All right. Can you tell us some of your earliest memories of Stone Cold Steve Austin, the Rattlesnake?
Well, one of my favorites is, and you can actually see me on the tape when they showed a replay, is I was at Joe Louis Arena when he came in on the Zamboni, and I was literally front row for that. I got pictures of him on the Zamboni. I have to dig out because we moved not too long ago, but that was one of my absolute favorite moments. I mean, seeing Stone Cold transition from Stunning Steve to what he was in ECW and then coming over to WWF or yeah, WWF then, was, you know, awesome. I think this generation of fans, they really missed a whole lot of entertainment when it came to the whole WCW, ECW, WWF wars.
Now, what did you think of Kurt Angle's spoof of Stone Cold's Zamboni when he came down to the ring in the milk truck and sprayed people with milk?
I laughed. I thought it was great.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Levi, have you heard of a Shakara wrestler called Sugar Dunkerton?
Yes, I have.
Oh, okay. Your thoughts on Sugar Dunkerton and Shockwave the Robot?
Shockwave the Robot. Oh, man. I think I've seen like one match with Shockwave. I mean, Sugar Dunkerton, I've watched a lot of highlights of him. Very, very entertaining. I'm actually surprised. You know, I mean, unless he's under a different gimmick, that I haven't seen him, you know, on any of the big shows. Shockwave the Robot, I think I've seen him, you know, once, maybe. I'm not. He's just the big gray, silver 1950s looking robot, correct?
Well, I don't know about 1950s. Well, I guess you could have some element in of the 1950 robot in there. Yes, like that robot on what was that one? Lost in Space. Yes.
Lost in Space. Danger, Will Robinson. Yes.
Yes. Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I'm showing my age, but still, I love that show. So.
Yes, Nick at Night. Yes. Well, Levi, we did not cover the subject of wrestling territories that were pretty big when Gorgeous George was wrestling. By the time that you started wrestling, the territories, of course, had pretty much died out. But the Native Americans also had their territories. There were the Sioux in North Dakota, the Apache in Arizona, the Iroquois in the Missouri area, the Lipans in the New York area, and the Kalitz Indian tribe here in the Northwest. My question is, are you familiar with the wrestlers Apache Bull Ramis and Chief Wahoo McDaniels?
I know Chief Wahoo McDaniel. I don't know the first one that you mentioned.
Oh, okay. Well, Apache Bull Ramis was a wrestler that was originally from Arizona. He wrestled with another Northwest icon up here, Dale Pierce. Dale Pierce knows Apache Bull Ramis pretty well. And Apache Bull Ramis was a Portland wrestler that wrestled for Don Owens back in the late 60s and 70s. He had feuds with Dutch Savage.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
I have to look him up.
Oh, okay. All right. I myself will try to send you some video of Apache Bull Ramis and Dutch Savage.
Okay. That'd be great.
Okay. And this also leads into the question, what are some of the main tribes of Indians in the Michigan area? Isn't it the Chippewas?
I'm not sure. They own the casinos out here, so I've never really asked them. They just take my money and send my butt home.
Oh, okay. They take your money. Wow. All right. Okay.
Yeah, I've never had much luck at gambling.
Are you mostly a one-armed bandit man or maybe a roulette table?
I like playing a little bit of poker. I like playing a little bit of five card. But nine times out of ten, I can't stay at the table very long because my wife's always there going, give me another 20. So I got to get up, and I generally play the slots. So.
Wow, play the slots. Okay. Well, at this time, I'm going to turn it back over to Sign Guy, and I hope you have good luck with your homework assignment.
Well, yeah. I'll let you know when it's all done.
Well, okay. And I will try to send you the Apache Bull Ramis footage. Yes.
Okay, excellent.
Back to you, Sign Guy.
Is Sign Guy asleep?
Uh-oh. Sign Guy might be. Oh, we may be having some technical difficulties, maybe.
I'm here. I got you. Slight technical problem, but I got it solved. So one of the things I wanted to ask you, Levi, is in your career, since you've been around for a while and you've been in a lot of promotions and a lot of different rings, the quality of rings varies a lot in independent wrestling. You can have some really scary rings. You can have some that are very comfortable to wrestle in. Do you have a personal favorite, just physical ring where you get to wrestle?
Honestly, XICW wrestling out here towards Detroit, they have the original ring that I trained in. And that every time I get in that ring, it brings back a lot of memories. That ring was actually one of the rings that was used for Midwest Championship Wrestling. I believe that ring was also used in big time wrestling at Cobo. Malcolm Sr. would allow a Sheik to use his ring there. So that ring has a lot of history in it, and it is really one of the most, you know, comfortable rings I have ever been in.
In your own career, have you ever seen somebody where, due to the nature of the ring and maybe a defect in the ring, it actually caused an injury to the wrestler, not really because of their own doing or the opponent's wrongdoing, but just because of a bad ring?
Oh, yeah, and I've had that experience myself. I wound up taking a bump where the boards were lifted, lifted and shifted, and I wound up taking a power bomb. And when I did, my arm actually dislocated from my elbow, or my elbow dislocated. And I still wound up finishing that match as well. But I've seen, you know, injuries in the past. You know, I don't know why promoters leave their rings outside and think a tarp's going to keep them from getting wet or damaged or the board's not warped. You know, that's your money. You know, that ring is your business. And us wrestlers are a product of that. And if you don't got the right equipment for your workers to work in, they're ultimately going to injure themselves, and in the end, it's going to hurt your business. So, you know, promoters that don't take care of their equipment, they need to take care of it, really. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
Absolutely agree with you on that. Now, obviously, in professional wrestling, since the dawn of professional wrestling all the way up to present day, there has been and always will be shady promoters that perpetrate the business, some of them not very ethical when they deal with talent or sponsors or the fans or a combination thereof. Have you had to deal with very many shady promoters during the course of your career, be it pre-retirement or post-retirement?
Oh, absolutely. You know, there's promoters out there now. I call them out on my Facebook every once in a great while. There's a promoter who's still running today. I still have a set of his turnbuckles out in my storage shed. He owed me some money and decided he wasn't going to pay me, so I took his turnbuckle covers. So, you know, I'll send you the money. Well, that's great. You'll get your turnbuckles back when I get the money. Well, I still got the turnbuckle pads. So, and that's been probably, the better part of 15 years. So,
well, hopefully he sends you a cashier's check in the next little while.
I doubt that. He's got bigger problems than me to worry about.
Now, speaking of turnbuckle pads, a lot of promoters take a lot of care as far as maintaining the cleanliness of the rings. They'll clean the turnbuckle pads. They'll bleach down the canvas, things of that nature. A lot of promoters do not clean it very thoroughly. And, of course, some states have no regulations where some states have a commissioner that inspects things like that. Have you had to deal with a lot of promotions where staff was a scare among the wrestlers due to the sanitation of the ring?
I've been in some pretty dirty rings. In Michigan, we don't have a commission. You don't have to be licensed. Staff, you know, I don't know about the other boys, but if the facility where we were wrestling at had a shower, as soon as I was done with the match, I was in the shower. I'm also a big Purell user. I probably should have bought stock early on in my career because I would go through Purell like crazy. I've been in some pretty nasty rings. So,
well, we're coming down to the last few minutes of the show, so I want to take the time right now to give you the opportunity, if there's anything you'd like to say to the listeners, plug and promote anything you'd like, social media's upcoming appearances, merchandise, your favorite casino, anything in the world, floor is all yours.
All right, well, I appreciate that. You know, I really want guys to be noticed, and this isn't about me. What XICW is doing. They have this show called Wrestling with a Vet. And if you haven't seen or know what Wrestling with the Vet's about, I would highly suggest that you go check out XICW Detroit on Facebook. BWCW stars, Andrew Darcy, is doing great things out there. Pure Pro Wrestling. There's a lot of guys out there. The Death Threat Army. These guys are going to be huge. You guys really need to check them out. Aaron Ryan, Jack Price, Kareem Alam, I believe his name is, and they're just adding people all the time. The Lethal Weapon, Alex Weir, those guys are going to be huge. I think Lotus is going to be huge. And if you want to find out more about me, ask me questions, I mean, you can check me out. I am on Facebook. Just look up Levi Blue. I think there's like three or four Levi Blues out there. But there's only one out there holding Billy Ray Daniels up for a body slam for my profile picture. So, and I appreciate you having me on the show. I know you've been trying to get me on here for a couple years. I was looking at the old messages. I think 2015 was the last time you asked me. So it's been, 3 years now? So appreciate you getting a hold of me.
Well, we appreciate you coming on the show. And I want to wish you luck as you continue on. It's nice having you back in the business for another run, and fans, if you get the chance, definitely go buy a ticket to see Levi Blue work, especially if you're in the Midwest, go out and see what he does. We will be back with you here on Sunday afternoon. We have Milo Beasley out of the great state of Florida. If you're not familiar with the Milo Beasley show on YouTube, you should definitely check out some episodes of that in preparation for Sunday. Go find yourself some wrestling to support this week. You can find me at WUW tomorrow at Pablo Anita's, and we will talk to you soon.